down the drum.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1363.JB2602, certificate number 30080, the underarm bowling incident.
Are you really serious? Have you, you can sit there and say that you had a legitimate alternative?
I like that it has incident in the name.
Incident.
Because that really gives it a kind of a geopolitical quality. Mm-hmm.
I love that it has underarm in it, a word we don't say often enough.
Only if Native is sponsoring the show. It's a sports story, which kind of makes the incident sound very funny. But, yeah. You know, to the guys who call into sports talk radio all day, nothing's more important than the details of sports. So, well, of course, you can't have incidents and crises and ultimatums and supremacies and whatever else in sports.
In the United States, we are so insular and so, chauvinistic about sport. We don't really engage in sport on the national stage. We have our sports. We think of when we call them world sports, but nobody else plays football, and we barely play soccer. And I say that acknowledging that soccer is amazing and that we totally play soccer. But when you think about soccer or cricket on the global stage, they really are incidents. I mean, they're
international incidents.
Yeah. Countries like
there can
go
be,
to war
there can
with
be
one
a
another.
War over a soccer match. Yeah. Do you feel like you, we think that for some reason in this country, we feel like our sports are, I guess this is Emersonian. They're muscular and Emersonian in some way. And we make fun of cricket or squash or, you know, whatever the British sports in particular seem funny to us.
It's extremely hard for me to understand cricket. And I say that as someone who for 30 years has kind of tried to understand cricket.
I'm in the same boat.
But they do all feel like prep school sports, well, right?
That's one problem. Cricket is the upper class sport.
And so is polo. And, rugby feels like a thing that big prep school kids play. Like they don't. And even though the stars are from Tonga, or New Zealand, they still feel preppy.
We got out in time as a colony. Australia got out so late that they were colonized by cricket. Yeah. And there, it's just a backyard sport that kids run around and play. And that's not true in the UK, where you need to have, a big grass field, and you need to go to the right school, and you need to pay the dues for the right club, and then you can be on a cricket team. But working class kids grew up kicking a soccer ball around.
It's really the soccer ball that's the working class sport, because also crew is really big in the UK. I mean, it feels like badminton. We turned the corner when we had field hockey, or what's it called?
Lacrosse, which was a Native American sport. That's funny. That became our insufferable upper class, maybe creepy, rapey frat guy sport.
Yeah, right. It's all lacrosse only happens on the East Coast, and it only happens with people that drive old Porsches.
But it was the Iroquois.
Right.
That should be our most woke sport.
Yeah, it should. But
it's being.
Have you ever known a lacrosse player?
I have not. I travel in the wrong circles.
Yeah, I think I met a couple at a frat one time.
I think my Ivy League friends all know lacrosse people. I'm sure some of them are lovely.
I don't know if they do. I mean, my Ivy League friends all, had pocket protectors. I don't think any of them knew any lacrosse players.
But cricket is a problem, not just because of its, it seems a little bit, because it's a upper class gentleman sport, there seems to be something a little bit, it's in the same way that Monty Python would tweak upper class twits.
Right.
It seems like it's of that milieu, right? Where it's something to be, it's something silly and unimportant. But as it spread to countries, the other countries that play cricket, which are not many, but it's all the remains of the empire, Pakistan, the West Indies, Australia, New Zealand. And Australia, as I say, it's much more of a common man sport. Everybody grows up playing it as kids.
I know the stars are all from India and Pakistan. It's an international sport.
Yes.
I'm going to just come right out and say it is incomprehensible.
I am going to try to understand cricket a bit just so you can understand the stakes and
the
events.
Aren't the games like 20 hours long?
Sometimes they're 5 days long. It's called a test match. Okay. Just, and they're very upfront about the fact that we are going to test your patience. I assume it's to test the stamina of the athletes, but on some level, it's testing the patience of the spectators as well. But yes, to understand the events of this cricketing world incident, probably the most infamous one in the history of world cricket from early 1981, you do have to understand the sport of cricket, and it's not a sport that's ever caught on in the U.S.
No, I've never seen. I see more bowls being played than cricket.
If you go around, Seattle is a city, insufferable city, that really embraced soccer because it felt like a hipster thing. That there would be
a liberal hipster thing.
A British accented stadium announcer, and meat pies would be for sale.
That whole goal thing, which is like, what are you doing? That's not how we talk.
And you could say side instead of team, and match instead of game, and supporter instead of fan. You could learn this whole new rarefied lingo and create a little space for yourself that separates you from the dopes cheering for the Seahawks.
Our team is part owned by Drew Carey.
It is.
Of the television show, what, Malcolm in the Middle or something?
Yes, Drew Carey, the star of Malcolm in the Middle. Weirdly, Malcolm was the star of the Drew Carey show.
But it's given some shape to the Seattle-Portland rivalry, because even though Portland is basically just a suburb of Seattle, their soccer team can compete with ours and beat us. And
not that often. We have a better team.
But it is a thing where they can march around with waving their scarves.
And that really is a mark against sports, I think, that you can create a weird kind of regional antipathy just by putting out some press releases, right? All these people in Seattle that do not care about Portland soccer are being told, dislike Portland a little more.
Well, Seattle is also the world headquarters of Frisbee Ultimate and Frisbee Golf. Like all of the big, big stars all come from Seattle parks, baby, basically.
We have a bunch of Frisbee golf courses. I've seen rugby being played in local parks.
I played rugby in college.
I know that your sports are skiing and rugby, and I'm not sure if you're going to be any help today in a different kind of sport.
I mean, skiing is comprehensible. You start at the top and you go to the bottom and you try to avoid crashing. Rugby, as I've said before, I played for 2 years. I have no idea how that sport is played. They put me in and they said, actually, don't you go after the ball because you're not smart enough to ever touch the ball. Just stand in between the other guys and the ball. And they're going to hit you really hard.
It's funny that you were somebody's nephew and they were forced to put you on the team. apparently.
Well, trying to fill out a rugby team, even in a Northwest Catholic college, where you would think people would, it's like, no, we need guys that weigh over 200 pounds.
They could not afford to turn down any interest.
Yeah, because they're the small guys in rugby that run, and they have to be fast. And then they're the big guys in rugby that just have to be able to take a hit. And I was able to take a hit. Still am.
I just think Seattle is due for some kind of cricket resurgence.
Right.
You
don't feel it's lacrosse first?
Except lacrosse has been tainted by the politics of it.
Yeah.
Good liberals won't cheer for lacrosse, but there's something kind of effete and weird about cricket where, by the same token as you might see somebody wearing a monocle here as a bit, maybe you'll see somebody trying to get 10 friends together and form a cricket side.
But why are the Indian and Pakistani and New Zealand and Australian cricket players all such butch like sports stars. They don't seem intellectual.
Well, it requires real athletic ability, cricket. It's not because because it has some of the trapping. It obviously, more than any sport, I think it betrays its origins as a children's game. Like, you're literally trying to knock over a couple sticks with balls on them.
Yeah.
Which seems like a Red Rover or a Mother May I kind of a way to end a game.
Yeah, and then there's someone with a boat oar that's trying to hit it, but then they don't even run the bases. They kind of, I don't know what happened. There is running.
Cricket bats are so famously an affectation that it's a joke in Spinal Tap. Remember Tony Hendra has the cricket bat in his office?
Of course. That's how you know he's the band manager.
Let me see if I can explain cricket in a way that is understandable. And this is going to be a little tricky because I do not, in fact, understand cricket.
There are so many futurelings right now who are really mad because they're cricketers.
Cricketers,
and we are making light of a very serious thing.
It's a legitimate sport, and it's no more weird than baseball. I've told this story before of being at a Mariners game and watching these two British people next to me who had just started at Amazon, just their jaws drop as they can't even tell who's running where and why and who's on the same team as whom.
When I was a kid, I used to go to baseball games, Mariners games, with my dad in the Kingdome, and I didn't know what was happening. What the hell is that?
I learned to score the game at the stadium, and that really helped me understand the game better.
Nerd.
Yeah. Luckily, nobody who's into baseball statistics is a nerd because it's a sport. If you're into baseball statistics, you're a jock. And anyway, sitting by these guys, I kind of apologized for baseball and tried to give them some pointers, and they were like, oh, that's okay. Cricket's way worse.
Yeah.
There was kind of this, even amongst the British middle class, there was kind of this assumption that even cricket is this weird, rarefied thing.
You have to grow up in it.
Yes, and it has class, and there's class implications to that. But it's really not that weird.
Okay.
There's some differences from baseball that make it hard for American eyes to understand. So I'm going to assume that some of our listeners are more familiar with baseball than cricket, because baseball, probably because of that George Will book, will be the sport of the distant future.
Yeah, because baseball, Americans, of all the sports that we play, baseball is regarded as the intellectual haven. If you're a smarty pants, you are supposed to enjoy baseball because it's all about statistics and strategy that isn't apparent.
Beautiful geometries.
Yes.
Maybe it's just because there's less physicality. There's less bumping and bruising, and therefore to a delicate little flower like George Will with his bow tie, this is more of his level of comfort with viscerality.
You know? George Will, a famous conservative columnist who was, in my opinion, wrong 89% of the time, but then
is the other 11% takes on 80s baseball?
Yeah, then
the other 11% is takes on Mike Schmidt?
He got this whole thing where he was like a man of the people because he loved baseball. I mean, in every other respect, he was so not a man of the people.
Insofar as there is an American class divide over major sports, not things like lacrosse or even swimming and diving that require the kind of infrastructure that we no longer put at certain places in our cities.
Right.
There is kind of this sense that baseball is the well-to-do sport that you need to be in a grassy suburb to play.
What's weird about it is that we think of baseball as like, oh, they're not, you know, they don't have to be as physical as football players. And even Ichiro, who looks like a small man on the baseball pitch,
has the most finely tuned body of anyone on earth.
And he's super tall and big. You know, like, I've seen Ichiro, and he is not a small dude. He is a big, strong man. And, you know, evidenced by the fact that he can throw a baseball from far left field.
And you look at what he can do, and you no longer think, oh, baseball is the sport for weenies.
He can throw a ball 400 yards directly to a person.
And yet, why were we unable, if baseball is so superior, why were we unable to, you know, we had to literally occupy Japan, quasi-occupy Korea, and then, you know, essentially culturally occupy
Cuba
and the Dominican Republic.
Honduras,
yeah. And that's as far as we got with our sphere of influence, whereas
no one plays it in Africa.
Yeah, Britain has had, even though we are the definition of cultural coolness, and all our celebrities are on ads in foreign climes wearing Yankees jerseys.
Yeah, take that, world.
Nobody wants to play baseball. And yet Britain did terrible things in Pakistan and everywhere. Jamaica and everywhere. And those people just happily line up to play cricket.
Well, I just can't. I can't account for it.
Maybe it's because the uniforms look really good in a tropical climate. White uniforms on sun-kissed skin. over Bermuda grass.
Mm-hmm.
A cricket pitch is a big oval.
Okay, that was not apparent to me. It's a big oval. All right.
That's not true, actually.
Okay, all right.
I'm already wrong once. The pitch is the rectangle in the middle of the oval.
Right, okay, I've seen that.
It's a cricket ground, is what you call the big oval.
So this is one thing that I don't understand. Even in baseball, there is one side.
There is forwards and backwards.
Right, and in cricket, it seems like there are just people standing all around.
It's radial symmetry, right. The weird thing about cricket is because the bat, or the oar, as you put it, is curved, you can, if you so choose, hit a ball behind you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Which is, in baseball, is bad news. It hits a net and you might get counted a strike.
Right. Or it's not a strike for many times after two of the strikes.
Cricket is less directional. Exactly. See, baseball's so easy. Cricket is less directional. Cricket has, at either end of the pitch, there is a wicket and a batsman. There are always two batsmen at once, one getting bowled at left to right, the other getting bowled at right to left.
What? What? Batsmen at once?
And this will blow anybody's mind who watches baseball because you assume that one person bats at once.
Where's the other batsman?
He's at the other end of the pitch waiting at the other wicket for someone to bowl to him.
What?
When the batsman that is getting bowled to, a bowl similar to a pitch, but it's generally it almost always hits the ground before the wicket.
Okay.
Which in baseball is bad if your pitch hits the ground before the plate.
It is. You can bounce it?
The bowler almost always bounces the ball.
I mean, I have to say
that it makes it trickier to hit.
The physicality of the bowling, the throwing of that ball, those are amazing windups. I mean, you really do feel like the pitcher has to be strong.
Yes.
And also there's a lot of technique in that.
And it's not that different, I'm sure, than someone in the Commonwealth watching a fastball pitcher in the States play baseball.
Right.
And just looking at the weird thing it does to their arm.
Yeah. And the fact that the ball is, I mean, there's a speed gun on it and it's going 100 miles an hour.
Yes. And cricket's the same way. The quality of the bowl, the trickiness of the bowl is just essential to the game. Because...
Oh, it's like spin and whatnot?
Sure.
Okay.
Because the batsman can hit the ball in any direction. When the batsman makes contact, he can choose to run, a choice a base runner does not have in baseball.
Okay.
If he has hit it sufficiently well that he thinks he can run to the other side of the pitch, he and the other batsman switch places.
Why would the other batsman move if he was running at them? Does the other batsman have to?
The other batsman will take his cue from the batsman currently batting.
Because he knows that if he gets the two batsmen can't be in the same place at the same time.
Yes, it's like a poly exclusion principle.
Okay,
it's like nuclear physics. So they continue to switch places and they get a run every time they switch places.
And this run. Okay.
And this happens a lot because, as I said, games can be like 5 days long. Games are two innings. Each side comes up once.
Oh. Are both the batsmen on the same team?
Yes.
Okay. So I understand.
So one team has a bowler bowling to one of the batsmen, and then the other 10 players, one player who's essentially a catcher, a wicketkeeper standing behind the batsman.
Yeah.
So analogous to the battery of a pitcher and a catcher in baseball. Then the other 9 players in the field at, you know, opportune intervals, but in a full circle surrounding the pitch because the ball, again, could be hit in any direction.
Right. Theater in the round.
Yes, it's theater in the round.
And so the catcher is trying to keep the ball from knocking over the pegs?
The wicketkeeper, yes.
And are the pegs behind him?
Well, no, he wants them to be knocked down, actually.
The catcher does?
The wicketkeeper, yes. The batsman, if they're knocked down, that's one way in which a batsman can be put out.
Oh,
and then a new batsman has to come up.
I see. The batsman's trying to keep the ball from hitting the wickets. That's why he's batting.
The way he can be caught out is if if a fly ball is caught, basically. Do they say fly ball? I'm not sure. Well, all the lingo is different. Like, you don't take a swing, you take a stroke, for example.
Right. And that's where, fly ball is called
that's where the expression different strokes comes from.
Is it really?
Yeah, I believe so.
And a fly ball is called a birdie or a bat.
A googly moogly or something.
Moogly. So the pitcher is not only trying to throw a pitch that the batsman cannot hit, but also aiming the pitch at the wickets.
Yes, he's trying to get it past the batsman. In baseball, all you would do is get it past the batter, and then the catcher would catch it, and that's, if it's a good pitch, it's a strike.
So the batsman,
but here, you're literally trying to knock over the wicket of these balanced sticks and balls.
And the batsman could just stand in front of the ball, except the wicket is basically at crotch height. So if he just stood in front of the ball, it would hurt him. So he's trying to bat to protect his Family jewels.
That's exactly right. The two balls sitting on top of the wicket symbolize the testicles of the batsman.
There are two balls on top of the wickets?
Yes.
You didn't mention that before.
It's why it seems like a children's game played in the woods. And that's probably where it originated. It's a circle because it was played in a clearing in the woods in, 7th century Wessex or something. And for some reason, it's still being played on at fancy preparatory schools today.
It's the story about rugby where they were playing soccer and then one of the kids just picked up the ball and ran. And
yeah, they were playing baseball and then a cricket started chirping.
Chirp, 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 chirp. Okay, so I get it so far.
Baseball game has 9 innings. In cricket, there's only 2 innings, but an inning is not 3 outs. It's every batsman coming up once. And they get to bowl, or they get to bat for as long as they can. So it's not unusual for scores in cricket to be 500 to 480 or something.
And how many times can they get the wicket knocked over before they're out? Just once?
Yeah, if the wicket's knocked over by the bowled ball, you're out.
But until it's knocked over, you can just keep whacking it and running back and forth.
Well, you shouldn't be whacking it because you're probably on TV.
You could be batting it.
You could just be stroking.
So you could That's be stroking. And I'm glad that this episode is going in this direction. And you can just keep running.
Back and forth.
If you whack the ball and it is caught, is that the same as the wicket getting hit?
Yeah, if it's caught in the air, that's another way to put
that's
a batsman
a way out. To get out. Yeah. But if you hit the ball and don't run, if you decide I can't make it, that's no strike against
you. Yes, but you don't get a run because right. You have not changed places with the other batsman.
But you could conceivably hit these grounders right to somebody and not score a run, but not get out and just sit there and do that all afternoon.
That seems right to me. So in an innings, your whole side comes up to
bat. Did you just say an innings?
Yes, it's not one inning, it's an innings.
It's like Ken Jennings. Just to be more annoying.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a singular.
It could have been Ken Jennings.
The cricket, an innings is divided into overs. They're a division of, the innings is divided into overs. And an over is when a bowler delivers 6 balls from the same side of the pitch to the batsman on that side. And then at that point, after that over, a different bowler comes in and delivers 6 balls to the batsman on the other side.
Oh, so the batsman on the other side is just standing there. He's not getting bowled.
All he's doing is exchanging bases until the other batsman's over ends.
I see.
And he becomes the one.
Why is
to
he
get
necessary
to
be out there doing that?
Well, he's going to exchange places with the.
But why couldn't he just sit on the bench and do that? I mean, he's exchanging places, but what does that do? He's not scoring 2 runs. He's just standing out there. He's like an understudy who's just sort of like running around, getting tired.
Yeah, it's for decoration.
I see. Okay, all right.
You want it to be like a ghost base runner, like when you're a kid and there's not enough guys to play baseball?
Well, at first it sounded like the two bowlers or the two batters were on opposite sides of the field, but there were two bowlers and they would they would pitch back and forth.
A new bowler comes in
after
6 balls.
So does that mean
pitch to the other guy?
Does that mean every
player? I keep saying pitch, but you don't say pitch. You say bowl.
You say bowl. Does that mean every player on the cricket team gets a chance to be the bowler? So they all have to be able to do this.
There is some strategy to that. You can swap in a new bowler at every time, but you don't have to.
Oh, it can just be the same bowler. He can turn around and
The next over, it can't be the previous guy, but when it comes back to the other side, you can leave in the bowler that was bowling to that batsman 2 overs ago, or you can decide to put in a new bowler.
Oh, I see. So you do have good bowlers and bad.
Yes, and there's some strategy, and sometimes there's limits as to how many different batsmen a bowler can face.
But everybody has to be a batsman once.
Yeah, in an innings, everybody bats.
Okay.
On your side. Not so bad,
no,
right?
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Okay, and there are some implications to this. One is that games can be very long. They have in a test match, it's a predetermined, look, we're going to go 5 days and then this ends. So there is essentially a clock.
We're going to go 5 days, but what if everybody hasn't bowled? Or what if everybody bowled 2 times?
I think it gets cut off.
Oh, so it's capped at 5 days, but it doesn't have to go to 5 days.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think maybe innings repeat until the 5 days are.
So there could be a 5-day test match where only one batter ever gets up and he just bats for 5 straight days.
I believe that is true.
That's cool.
You play, and those longer ones are four innings, not two.
Oh, okay. But, so everybody gets up twice.
And I think once everybody gets up, I think it's, it may be four innings in the sense that everybody gets up four times, but in any case, you can end early if you know, the innings end on the, on an earlier day.
So it could be that a 4-day test match or a 5-day test match only lasts an hour because everybody gets up and their first pop fly gets caught and they're done. And then the same thing happens on the other side and the game is over.
Yeah, it's normally going to be a wicket's getting knocked over. That's
a wicket.
When you're bowled out, that's by far the most common situation.
It's more common that the wicket get knocked over than that a ball be caught.
Yes.
Do they have gloves to catch the balls?
The wicket keeper has a leather. The fielders do not. I think only the wicket keeper, you know, the equivalent of our catcher.
So this ball is coming at you, and you've got just bare hands.
It's hard.
Okay.
Yeah.
That does seem hard.
The wicketkeeper wears one on both hands because he's essentially a goalie.
Right.
In addition to being a catcher.
But he wants it to knock over the wicket.
Oh, that's true. You're right. I said that wrong. The batsman is both a batter and a goalie.
Yeah.
He's trying to defend the wicket.
Right.
His
defend the wicket.
His time at bat depends on that wicket staying upright.
All right. So he's less interested in hitting the ball.
So even though he's the offensive player making runs, in a way he's also like a defensive goalie trying to just scatter balls so right. that they do not bounce into the wicket.
So he does want to hit it because he wants to score a run. He doesn't want to just ground it out at his feet.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if he doesn't make a run but does protect the wicket, he still has succeeded at his job.
And, you know, cricket having a history that's centuries long has an interesting bearing on our particular program today because...
Thank you for listening to Two Sightless Men Describe an Elephant, by the way.
We're going to get more correspondence on this episode than any other.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there are just 20... things I got wrong and 100 fringe cases I didn't mention.
Right. And I sound like I'm being dismissive of cricket, which of course I am not.
I thought you were going to say, which of course I am.
But I said it. I said, I am not in a way that communicates for sure I am.
As part of the, you know, in much the same way that football, American gridiron football changed over the years with innovations like the forward pass.
And the helmet.
Right. Cricket has also changed the rules over the years in ways in which kind of innovative new ideas have advanced the game. And one of those was the idea that you would pitch overhand. In the past, all cricket bowling was done underarm, underhanded.
And by in the past, you mean, from the 7th century to the present?
I mean centuries ago. I mean, like in the 18th century, for example, all cricket balls were bowled underarm.
Mm-hmm.
And the overarm era did not begin until the mid-19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still underarm bowlers, you know, for years thereafter, even though, you know, it's kind of the equivalent of somebody in baseball that still throws, you know, a knuckleball or some really weird kind of underhanded delivery.
But this is still before the invention of baseball.
That's pretty close. Nobody actually really tried lob bowling much after the earliest decades of the 20th century. Underarm bowling has been extinct for a century, and it's been an oddity for almost two centuries. But in February 1981, in Melbourne, Australia, the greatest controversy in world cricketing history occurred.
Okay.
When Australia was facing New Zealand in the World Cup or the World Series of cricket. And it's called the World Series Cup, but it's, you know, even by baseball standards, it's a pretty ludicrous World Series.
It's like the America's Cup in sailing.
There actually is a international cricketing championship. This is not that. It's called the World Series Cup just because, you know, it was a, you know, as a way to dress up a three-team tournament where Australia plays against India and New Zealand.
I see. So it's just three teams.
Yes. And Australia and New Zealand are in the finals. Boy, what a bummer. There's only if you're India.
I know.
There's only three teams in this World Series, and you're...
Good work, you guys.
You get eliminated. It's a best-of-five final, which means it's not a test match. There's five one-day international cricket matches. Oh, the one-day international is a single-day style and rule set of a cricket match. And the games have been played all over Australia, which is the host country that year, Perth, Brisbane, Adelaide. This particular one is on the Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Okay.
And at the climactic end of the game, with everything on the line, there's only one ball of the final over.
It's a tie game?
It is not a tie, but it's extremely close. Australia had a great innings in its last time at bat, but with a big lead. But New Zealand had successfully chased back, and now we're within six runs of a tie game.
Oh boy!
And
seven runs of a New Zealand victory.
Yes, and the fact that it's six runs is very important here, because in cricket you are awarded, kind of in the manner of a home run in baseball, you're awarded four runs for a ball that lands in the cricket grounds and then bounces over the rope before a fielder can get to it. Oh. So if a ball exits the grounds, that's four runs. And if a ball makes it into the past the rope without bouncing, a home run in baseball, that's six runs.
Oh, he's one home run away.
Yes, it's the equivalent of
sumo.
Yes, the tying run at the plate, where a walk off home run. Well, not a walk off, because in this case it'll tie it up. But this is a big deal. And the other batsman, Brian McKechnie, has actually scored a century, which means he has, in his time at bat, he has scored over 100 runs in that innings, which is something you can do in cricket. You can just keep running back and forth.
It's a thing you can do so much that there's a name for it.
Yes, a century is 100 runs.
Is there a millennium?
I don't think
no one's ever achieved it.
I don't think a millennium has ever happened. Let's find out. What do you think the record is?
Is there a bicentennial?
Would they call it a bicentennial?
If you can score 100 runs, you can score 200 runs.
In one day international cricket, okay, I'm mystified by all these scores.
Yeah.
Most centuries, most 50s, fastest 50s. How many balls did you have to face to get 50 runs?
Mm-hmm.
Most sixes in an inning, most fours in an inning. Wow. Owen Morgan has hit 17 sixes in an inning. That's like hitting 17 home runs in a single inning.
He was really on.
He did that last summer against Afghanistan.
Oh, that's new. Okay.
Yeah, and Afghanistan's just been ravaged by so many invasions that it's got to be hard to field a good cricket team. I think the record I'm looking for here is highest individual scores. And in one-day international cricket, the record is 264. Rohit Sharma of India in 2014.
264. All right.
2.5 centuries. That's what I call it.
Yeah, 2.5 centuries. Well, what's a 50 called? Just a 50?
A 50 is called a 50, yes. Okay. And apparently, there's only been about, it looks like there's been less than a dozen 200s. Oh, yeah, there's been 10 200s in the history of one-day international cricket.
Oh, wow. Okay, so statistics are also important in cricket as they are in baseball.
It's the same thing. Like, there's, that's a lot of the fun of the game is how much fun it is to drill down into these very, because there's innings divided into overs, it's fun to drill down statistically.
Has there been a recent sort of sabermetrics transformation of cricket?
Oh, that's interesting.
Where instead of the big star, they're going for the down in the dirt player?
I would be skeptical because, I'm just reading a thing saying that the statistical analysis of cricket is pretty basic. So no, but also the fact that tradition is so important to the sport, as we'll see, people trying to find weird ways to game the game of cricket is not received well.
Oh, because there's honor and there's all that class honor.
It's a sport of gentlemen.
I see.
Which comes into play, again, Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Also weirdly true of baseball.
Yes. You see this in baseball. Well, what's a good example? Yeah, earlier this season, somebody tried to bunt to break up a no-hitter.
Right, that's completely unprofessional.
And it really annoyed me because I think it was a 1-0 no-hitter. Like, his job is to get on base because team can still win. If he can get on base, they are a stroke of the bat away from the lead.
Right.
So there's nothing unsportsmanlike about that, but you had a lot of tisking and booing because it's simply not done my good boy.
Yeah, at a certain point, the no-hitter becomes the thing everybody's rooting for, even if you hate the team and the pitcher.
So imagine the situation here on Melbourne Cricket Ground. Just there's one ball left of the last over of the match. So the batsman, Brian McKechnie. I think I actually said McKechnie was the other batsman. That's not true. He's the one that faces the pitch. It's Bruce Edgar, who was on the non-striker's end of the pitch, and he was at 102. So he'd had a great innings.
Yes. He'd made a century.
Just barely. Brian McKechnie is going to receive the last ball, and if he can hit a six, in other words, if he can hit it beyond the rope, he can hit it out of the grounds.
He's the last batter.
He has tied it up. Yes. And I'm actually not clear on what would happen here because the series is tied 1-1. Australia has a win. New Zealand has a match. If he had hit that and tied it up, would it be a draw? In most cases, in most kinds of cricket, I would say yes. Because this is a best of five series, there may have been some kind of tiebreaker provision in the rules. I don't know.
You're saying if he had hit the six and then immediately been out on the next pitch.
Well, no, there will be no more pitch. There's only six pitches in an overs. A six pitch. Wait, is that true? Yes. Yeah, this is a change in one day international cricket, which I think is a concession to the patience of the viewer. It's you know, just in the last few decades, these one day international rules have come about.
Now, this is confusing to me because, of course, there's no other version of baseball, right? We don't like play four inning baseball sometimes.
There's softball. You know, you might have a city league with a skunk rule, or you know, games over with a 10-run lead or something.
But I'm right that the New Zealand team will play like 5-day test cricket and also 1-day international.
Yeah, the same team will play different matches by different rules, and you have to know what the rules are of the tournament as you're going. Okay. And one of the adaptations of 1-day cricket is that each of the innings has a set maximum number of overs.
I see. Okay.
So you know that this is the last ball of the match.
Okay. The last ball. So he can tie it up or lose it, but those are the options. He can't, there's no way for him to score more than 6 points.
He could hit it so, let's see, can you hit it so well that he could make seven runs on the same ball? It seems unlikely.
And have it not go out of the circle? There would have to be like a lot of forced errors.
Seems unlikely. Anyway, and the Australian side has done its math wrong.
What?
Its captain, Greg Chappell, has tried to count on his, because of those rules about when you can put in a new bowler, you know, you want to end the game with your best bowler facing the last batsman, because in this one day rules, you know what the last over is going to be. And he has done his sums wrong. And so he has not put up his strongest bowler. Instead, his brother, Trevor Chappell, is delivering the last ball.
And there are referees in stripy hats and seersucker suits who are sitting behind a folding table monitoring all this.
Yeah, umpires. And there's a very funny thing about umpires
They're called umpires.
And there's a funny thing in cricket where you actually, a runner is not out just because, for example, a ball has been caught. You actually have to ask the umpire, hey, did I get him out? And the umpire has to agree. Yep, you sure got him out.
Do they raise up a flag on the yardarm or something?
You say, how's that, basically.
And what? How often would an umpire say, nah?
You'd really wonder, right? It seems like a formality at that point.
Okay.
But, you know, just like the vice president certifying election results, you know, it seems like a formality. And that's kind of what happens here with the formality of the overarm bowl.
We're still living in a world where all pitches have been underarm.
Have been overarm.
Oh, since the mid-19th century. They've all been thrown overhand.
Except for a few. There were some lob pitchers into the early 20th century.
Okay.
But yes, it's been 60 or 70 years since there was a great lob bowler in cricket. And yet, Greg Chappell goes up to his brother Trevor, about to deliver the last ball, and says, how are you bowling your underarms? And Trevor, you know, shocked by such a personal question. Well, I mean, he really is shocked. He says, I don't know. I don't know.
And did he mean, how are your underarm pitches?
Yes.
And he wasn't talking about his physiology.
No.
And why would anyone practice an underarm pitch?
That's the thing. He's like, do you think you could deliver a legal underarm pitch, even though this is not really part of the game? And his brother shrugs and the captain says, well, you're going to find out, aren't you? So he instructs him.
Why is he talking like he's from Boston?
He instructs him to bowl the ball underarm. Now, this is not illegal.
Oh.
In some tournaments, it would be. Some tournaments have a specific rule saying no underarm bowling. That's old timey. But the Benson and Hedges World Series Cup, then the sponsor, has no such rule. So it's perfectly legal what is about to happen.
Can you imagine an underarm pitch in professional baseball?
Yeah, it would be a home run every time. It would be like in the 14th inning where some position player has to come out and try to pitch. That's what you'd get. And so when to this day, this is a very dark moment in the history of cricket. And to this day, when the Chappell brothers are asked about this, they tend to avoid the subject or avoid interviews. But often they will frame it as just complete contrition. Hard to explain what they were thinking. And they'll often talk about, you know, just on that fateful day, you don't understand how oppressive the heat was in the cauldron of the Melbourne cricket grounds.
This isn't a thing they're smug about.
No, they are a national embarrassment, international embarrassment. They are exhausted. They were frustrated.
They protest too much.
They had recently lost another World Series game on a late six to tie. They weren't familiar with this new format of one day international. They were discombobulated.
I should say for the futurelings that Ken's brow is furrowed in concern, and so is mine.
It is just funny to hear them talk about how just what kinds of constraints or hardships they would have to undergo to have made the terrible choice they did to try a perfectly legal cricket strategy, which is to bowl the last ball underhanded, which is exactly what Trevor Chappell does. He notifies the umpires.
This is beforehand.
Yes, this is a sporting thing. Because if you watch the clip, the commentators know, yes, I see the umpires have been notified that he is going to bowl underarm.
But the batter doesn't know.
I think the batter has heard.
The batter also knows.
Yes.
So here it comes.
Yes. And the fact is the underarm ball will come so slowly and bounce so slowly that he has no chance to hit it out of the grounds. So
it's like a cheapo pitch.
Yes. You know, it's not that different from, you know, to a baseball fan, it's not that different from
throwing outside.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Throwing or an intentional walk to a strong batter to bring up a weaker one.
Yeah. Right. It's not, people boo it. But it's done.
The home team boos, you know, the other team boos it because they think, oh, you're scared of us. We're not getting a chance to show a great play. But nobody says the rules should not allow this, or in fact, the rules do not allow this.
Were the commentators at the time already expressing that it was scandalous before the pitch?
Yes. They have never seen anything so awful. They cannot, even the Australian announcers,
right,
are just scandalized by what is about to be done to cricket
because it's unsportsmanlike.
It's going to assure the win,
yeah, which is what you want.
It's legal according to the rules,
yeah.
And this is something I think it's a big gap between American sport and international sport, where there's kind of an assumption in every major American team sport that the team will do what it takes, and the referees are going to make some calls, and the referees are going to miss some calls, but there's nothing scandalous about trying to do something legal but untraditional. In fact, there's something kind of innovative and fun about watching a team try a weird trick play in football as time expires.
Like football, the last goal of the game, if you're at 4th down at the end of the game, you want to pull a trick. And think about the missing baseball trick.
Sure, the hidden ball trick. People love that kind of thing.
Oh, it's hilarious because the runner thinks one person's got the ball and he's pretending to have the ball in his mitt, and then somebody else actually has it. And
to me, this seems more analogous to somebody running a prevent defense at the end of a football game. And
what does that mean?
Just, you know, you allow for short yardage gains but you don't, you know, you place your defender such that a long pass that would change the outcome of the game is unlikely.
Yeah. Okay.
It seems like pretty analogous to what's happening here. And nobody, you know, it's kind of accepted widely that of course you would do that. To do anything else would be silly. But because there's no such tradition in international sports, and you know what? You see it in soccer too. You see it in association football. There was I remember about a decade ago, France eliminated Ireland in a World Cup match, or maybe, eliminated them either from the next round of the cup, or maybe it was a qualifying round. I can't remember. On, I think, a late goal where it turned out in the replay, you could see Thierry Henry touching the ball with his hand twice. And
as a player, not as a goalie.
Right. He was not allowed to do so, but there was no call. And people didn't just, you know, in the U.S., if that had happened, people would talk about the bad call or the bad no call.
Yeah,
the referees missed the pass interference, and you know, there would be some decorum about, you know, you wouldn't accuse the referee by name of anything.
But we have instant replay now that kind of changed the game too, but the coach would have to protest.
And this was soccer had no instant replay at the time. In fact, this was the play that led to serious discussion of instant replay in soccer, because from above you could clearly see, yeah, the guy touched the ball twice, but the response was not just what a terrible no call. It was what a terrible thing that Thierry Henry had done to soccer.
Was it an accidental touch, or was he trying to do some kind of thing?
No, I think it was clear that he didn't care much, and if he didn't get caught, he was going to do it. Wow. But that's kind of the unspoken agreement in American sports. I mean, there's an exception for when it might harm another player.
But basketball, they're fouling and traveling all the time.
Yeah, you're traveling as much. When a basketball player takes a fourth step and thinks he can get away with it because the referee didn't see the little stutter, nobody says, what lack of respect for the game.
Right.
If anything, they say, hey, the refs need to start calling that tighter, and that's what the league says. But in international sport, there's this real sense that it's ungentlemanly,
right,
to take advantage of these subtleties of the rules.
Right.
And
because they come from a code of chivalry that never existed in the United
and
States.
It's especially, and I think that's what it is. And it's especially true in cricket, which did come from an upper-class game played by gentlemen. And that's what happens when this becomes an international incident. You know, the Prime Minister of New Zealand says, well, that was an act of cowardice.
So he throws it underhand, and does the batter hit the ball?
The batter kind of tosses his, he kind of throws he has to block, all he can do is block it, because it's kind of,
yeah,
dribbling into him. He blocks it, which is all he can do, you know, tosses the bat away in disgust and stalks off the field, never having imagine such an insult could happen.
Oh, so
in international,
it's a personal insult, and he is visibly contemptuous of it.
Yes, and everybody is. I mean, it's being played in Australia, so nobody's throwing things. But in the days that come, even the Australian Prime Minister has to say how regrettable it was, and you know, contrary to the traditions of the game. You know, nobody stands by the Chapel Brothers, and it's the New Zealand Prime Minister who, you know, kind of takes us to the level of an international incident by saying, this is an act of cowardice. It was appropriate that Australia was wearing yellow that day because they happened to be wearing these very 70s kind of yellow and green kind of disco jumpsuit looking things, which are fantastic polyester creations.
Those are strong words.
Yes. And he goes on to say, it is the most disgusting incident I can recall in the history of cricket.
Wow.
Which used to be a game of gentlemen.
Oh, so it's the end of an era,
too. He's explicitly saying, this used to be a game where people wouldn't take advantage of the rules. And this is just mind-boggling to me as an American.
And it's the older brother who's responsible, the captain of the team.
Yeah, he told his younger brother,
right,
because he had screwed up and put in a weaker bowler.
Right.
He didn't want to take any chances. And, you know, and again, in the years to come, he has to say, oh, boy, I really screwed
up,
guys.
Hot.
It was just such a hot day and we had played so many games in such a short span in that trying time, and I just
lost my mind.
It's like a rock star having to apologize for pinching a stewardess's bottom or
throwing a cup of yogurt,
yeah, or saying something awful on the stage or something. Yeah, boy, I was just exhaustion, and I immediately checked myself into a program for self-care. But the thing he's apologizing for is doing something legal that won the game.
Wow, an important game.
Yeah, it would have put them up 2-1 in a World Series game, and no American team would have had compunction in a similar,
you know,
series.
What's interesting is in the administration just prior to the one we're now living in, the presidential administration here in the United States, we were first introduced to the idea of how much American politics was governed by gentlemen's agreements.
This is a game of gentlemen.
Yeah.
As long as everyone acts well and in the traditions of their predecessors,
right,
things seem to work okay.
Do presidents reveal their tax returns? Of course. Do presidents not profit from the presidency? Do they not keep their hotels in Washington, D.C.? Do they divest themselves of things that might be a conflict of interest? Of course.
Even things as foundational to government as whether you can just have somebody serve for years in an acting position rather than trying to get them confirmed to that position.
Yeah, right. Or do you follow protocol and try and get, you know, try and if a president nominates a Supreme Court justice, is there not some protocol that we do that in a timely fashion?
Right.
And so all of that was such a shock to us. Because I don't think we understood that there weren't any rules, that it was all just like handshakes.
And is it wrong that my response is, well, that just means the rules should be written better? It seems like relying on the lack of imagination or the goodwill of hypothetical people is always a terrible idea.
Well, it is, except you want to think that the office is lofty and that you would only elect someone that was more high-minded. And that was the thing that we didn't understand, that you could even, it was even conceivable that you could elect someone who didn't believe in those traditions. But of course, that's the world.
You know, if there are two worlds where we're used to this overly detailed kind of legalistic approach to every single I being dotted and every single contingency being planned for, it would be government rule and the official rule book of a professional sport.
If a police officer uses the wrong color pen in filling out the form, the perp is exonerated.
This is where you see subsection 2, you know, section 2, subsection A, Roman numeral 4, you know?
And so we're looking at the filibuster even now as like, wait a minute, let's rewrite this. Oh, the Electoral College, like, we need to write this down. Interesting. So
And the rules were in fact changed.
Cricket said, you cannot do this.
Yes, going forward, it became explicit that, you know, underarm bowling is
out.
Cannot be done.
Outski.
Right. Whereas the, you know, Australia had previously been operating under the Air Bud rule, which is, you know, nothing here says I can't bowl underarm. And I'm unapologetically just baffled by the international approach to sport. Where people should not actually try legal things to win. Just because it seems hard to me to determine in a given moment which things are allowable and which are not, if you're kind of going by this unwritten law.
Yeah, right. If there's just a sense of this still being a contest that is in place of war,
right,
then it's being governed by rules like that you don't dismount your horse in order to, you know, flay your opponent if he is a member of a noble family or something, right?
And that's the exception I would make. You know, if it's something where if somebody's pushing a rule that could actually lead to somebody else being hurt, you know, Bill Laimbeer throwing an elbow trying to get Michael Jordan to quit driving the lane, or there's a famous case in the early 70s of a Canadian hockey player double slashing a Soviet guy named Karlamov and breaking his ankle.
Ugh.
And it was because he was trying to get that guy out of the game.
Right. Or throwing a baseball to injure a batter.
Yeah, throwing a baseball at a batter's head. Like all that stuff for sure. And, but the thing is we actually have rules about that. Like when a batter in baseball or a pitcher tries to cheat by doctoring a ball or a team tries to steal signs, we're not just violating some code of how gentlemen would play baseball. Those things are explicitly prohibited in the rules. And luckily for the Chapels, there was a worse incident in cricket quite recently, I think 2018 or 2019, where a bowler did try to use adhesive tape on the ball to make the ball harder to hit. And, you know, this then became the worst incident in the history of, I think this was also Australia, but in the history of international cricket.
Right. Thank goodness for the Chapels. They were surpassed.
And to me, they're heroes. I would put those guys on stamps.
I am astonished more than anything that I learned about cricket from you, Ken Jennings.
Who better?
And that concludes the underarm bowling incident. Entry 1363.JB2602. certificate number 30080, in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, it's not even unlikely, in the certain event that social media does not exist in your era, you can still go look at the microfiche of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can see our episodes archived at Omnibus Project. Also, Ken Jennings continues to tweet into, he tweets into the twilight.
I'm going to be the last man.
He dances in the face of Armageddon at Ken Jennings. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. And you can find other like-minded futurelings at, the Facebook and just other places, Discord and Reddit,
just a subreddit,
so forth, under the Futurelings moniker. You can support the show at patreon.com/omnibusproject. We are listener funded, listener supported, and our Patreon is a wonderful place at omnibus/omnibusproject. Also, the different tiers of your Patreon support entitle you to listen to a monthly addenda episode. Also, we will send you our show notes, which are chicken scratch. Ken often writes his show notes on the back of his electric bill, so you basically know his address.
I've been going through all my scratch paper and separating it into things that can be mailed to listeners and things that not, you know, tax forms cannot, but
right.
You may get a Sousa march on the back of your, if you get the show notes for last week's Memex show.
Oh, you have a Sousa march, the sheet music for it, because one of your children is in marching band.
My son's in marching band, yes.
Mine are often chicken scratched in the margins of 60s Playboy centerfolds that I've ripped out or actually carefully removed the staples from.
So you want, request one of John's.
Yeah, that's a little bit extra.
Unless you love John Philip Sousa.
And you can mail us. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com, but you can mail us things at P.O. Box 55744. Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Michelle and Taylor of Oregon have sent you something, John. I just opened this.
Thank you, Michelle and Taylor.
I get kind words about Jeopardy, but you actually get a physical item. They were in Vegas looking at some antique stores, and they found something that they think you were looking for. They're not sure if you already got one, and you may have two. Do you have a Shmi Skywalker action figure?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's going to make me very popular with my child.
Because there's no female characters in Star Wars.
No, and she has, and for a long time we had a figure that looked like Shmi, but it was actually a version of Leia from a different episode. And then my daughter discovered in one of her Star Wars reference books that that was not Shmi, and we were all horrified. So this later Leia has been playing the role of Shmi, but now
it's like on a soap opera.
Yeah.
This week, Shmi Skywalker will be played by Leia Organa. It just occurred to me that Shmi is probably short for Lakshmi.
Why would George, that be?
Because Shmi is such a terrible woman's name.
Well, what is Lakshmi?
It's an Indian name. It's an Indian goddess. It's a Vishnu's consort.
Oh, I had no idea.
And I think because Padme is also from Padma, like a another word from Indian, from Hindu lore.
I bet you that George Lucas was reading the Kama Sutra because he had a new girlfriend, and he was like, I've got it. I know.
Shmi just sounds like Captain Hook's sidekick. What if it's actually a name for a cool mom who doesn't want Annie to pod race? She's not that cool.
Well, no.
She's anti-pod racing.
She seems to have lived through the Clone Wars, which is more than you can say for Padme.
And slavery. I mean, yeah. you got to cut her some slack.
She kind of stays in slavery. Am I wrong?
Yeah, Anakin just leaves her in slavery.
Anakin
and is
never
like,
goes
hey,
back.
Have fun with Watto.
I mean, it's not very long after that he could have gone back to Tatooine and released her, right? I mean,
it's like a decade later. He's finally like, hey, I wonder what mom's up to.
Yeah, it never happens. Weird.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, however, this very recording might be our final one, so it's a good thing we got to cricket.
Yeah, here.
If Providence allows, however, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.